For coaches, by coaches, this is Soccer Chat with Nick Rizzo and Sean Soderly. Brought to you by Social Media for High School Athletes.
Welcome, everybody, once again to another edition of Soccer Chat for coaches, by coaches. We are here for you. We are more than coaches. We are, well, I'm a husband. Nick is a single man on the prowl. We are educators. We are teachers. We are fun dudes. We're dudes. We're just dudes. But more importantly, as I said, we are soccer coaches, and we bring this to you every single week by the fine folks at Social Media for the High School Athletes. You can find them on social media at HS Social Media on all platforms, or check out their website, socialstudentathletes.com. This is a huge, very big supporter, listener-supported podcast that we put out for free for people just like you who are listening, and just like Coach Josh Olroyd from University of Evansville, who popped up to me at a camp this weekend and was like, "Hey, I've been listening." Well, I don't have the accent that he's got, but he was like, "Hey, I've been listening to your podcast. It's really, really good. Keep it up. Like, I want to be on sometimes." So I'm Sean. He's Nick. And Nick, we have fans.
Like, honestly, I have no idea how this happened, because we're not that cool or that funny. But maybe we just have good guests. That's what it comes down to. I'm sure people probably fast forward through this part, and there's like, Sean and Nick are just going to babble about something for like 15 minutes, and then we get to the good stuff.
Yeah, there are a couple people who have admitted that they do skip the intro, and that does make me sad, because I know that our intros are good, because that's our personality. But yeah, it's crazy. And then once he said it, it was almost like a chain reaction. Like, other guys just start popping. I'm like, "Oh, you're the podcast guy." Something I've never been called before in my life. I've been called a lot of things. I've been called a lot of things. Trust me on that. But I've never been called the podcast guy. And that's really cool that that people are getting into this. Who would have ever thought?
Not me. It's funny, because like I was actually, I forget who I was talking to over the weekend, but someone was asking me, like, "When did you guys decide to start this, or how did you decide to start this?" And I was just like, I think we just like we're tweeting GIFs back at is it GIF or GIF? I say it wrong all the time.
It is GIF.
GIF. We literally started by tweeting GIFs, joking with each other back and forth at Soccer Chat one night, and then we just decided that you wanted to start this podcast, and I was all for it, and we became friends literally because of GIFs.
Yeah, anybody who asked my wife, she would tell you that I speak highly in GIF or GIF, whatever it is. It's GIF. It is. That's. I remember seeing the video for that. That specifically, it's GIF. Yeah, I speak highly of it. We hope everybody had a great holiday week. Last week there was no Soccer Chat on Twitter, which you could check out every single Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Twitter by following the hashtag Soccer Chat, or go follow the account at Chat Soccer with no E, so that's SOCCR. Nick, how much did you eat? I know that it probably didn't last long, because you probably turned around and ran 25 miles directly after eating, but how was your holidays?
It was good. I got back home. So my parents, they're, as my friends refer to them, they're secret agents. They just kind of travel the world. So my family, my mom was in, they were going from Dubai to Mumbai to Taiwan. And so I wasn't able to meet up with my family. So I went up, one of my best friends from high school shot me a text, because he saw them like on all these trips. And he was like, "Hey, your parents are probably out of the country still. Do you want to come eat here?" So I went over with my, one of my best high school friends, ate there. And then he'd gotten engaged in October. So he asked me to be in his wedding that day. And a girl soccer player that we'd been recruiting pretty hard called and committed to us. So it was a really good Thanksgiving. And we played a lot. I'd never played, I forget. Of course, I'm going to forget the name of the game that we played. But we played this board game that was super addicting and really long. So I didn't get home until like 2 in the morning. But it's like a game like where you have like a bunch of like territories, and like, you have to like build towers and roads, and I don't know. It was super long, and I got home at like 2 in the morning, but it was a lot of fun. How was yours?
It was good. I got to go back home to Indiana. In my marriage, we divvy up the holidays, and we normally go Or we normally are in Indiana for Thanksgiving and we go to Michigan for Christmas. But it was kind of cool. I actually got to I flew with both my kids on Monday and flew back down to Indiana after just getting back from a showcase in Ohio. So I got to spend some extra time with my family. I had some family from the East Coast came in for the week that I haven't seen in a couple of years. We just had a really good time. I got to take them to Indianapolis and give them a little tour. They're big racing fans. So we went to the Speedway. I got to kiss the bricks. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if I posted it on Twitter. I know I posted it on my Facebook and my Instagram account, but I'll make sure to do it on Twitter just for everybody. But I got to kiss the bricks, which is a big thing at the Indy 500, the Brickyard 400. If you win, you kiss the bricks. They ask you what it tastes like. I said it tasted like 108 years because the bricks are like 110 years old or something like that. But the actual correct answer is victory, which I was not aware of for whatever reason. But it was good to get back home and be in warm weather. That was warmer weather than what I've been in. And then my wife came down Wednesday night, and we had a good Thanksgiving dinner with my grandmother's side of the family. It was good times, a lot of food. Watched some football with the guys. We just had a really good time. And then my wife and I did our Black Friday shopping on Thursday night, which a little secret about me, I am a very, very good Black Friday shopper. For whatever reason, I've got a knack for it. I know when to go. I know where to go and what times. And we were able to actually knock out all of our kids' Christmas things on Thursday night, with still getting the deals from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, except on Thursday at a place that, like, for whatever reason, nobody was at, and it was awesome. We didn't have to fight a crowd. We just walked in. We got our stuff. We were able to kind of shop around like it was a normal shopping trip, and we went right to the cash register, went through, got in our car, and went back to my mom's house. So if you ever need help with your Black Friday shopping, just let me know. Maybe I'm the guru of it. I don't know yet.
See, I hate shopping so much that I don't ever do it in person. I do all 100% of my shopping online. I'm a great Cyber Monday shopper. I got a ton of work done today. But I can't, like, I'm one of those people that I hate wasted time so much. And I like standing in lines waiting like for 20, 30 minutes to get my stuff checked out just gives me a ton of anxiety. And so that's just one of those things that I can't do.
Or is it that you just hate people?
A combination of those two things. Okay. I hate people in person. That's why we've never met in person.
Yeah.
It's just mainly because I don't like faces. Like, they freak me out.
Yeah. So my wife is not a large crowd person. So what we used to do was she would go to sleep, give me a list of what all we needed to get, and then I would go out, you know, past midnight and get what we needed, or I would get her stuff a lot through that. So, like I said, I have figured out a spot. I'll give you the secret off air, but I have found the spot to get all your Christmas shopping done in one night with no hassles, with a very small group of people, and get great prices on everything, and you will absolutely love it. Now, you're going to have to travel a little bit for it, but I think it'll be worth it in the long run. And in the long run, we skipped last week because of the holidays, but we have a great interview for you. Unfortunately, we made you wait a week for it, but I think people are really going to like it, and we've got the interview coming up for you right after this.
We've all seen the Facebook postings, we've all seen the tweets of college coaches admitting that they've stopped recruiting an athlete because of what they've posted on social media. Lucky for you and your student athlete, Social Media for the High School Athlete is here to help. Check out their website, socialstudentathletes.com, where they have a wide array of services that can help your school, your team, or your child. They have everything from books, social media review and consulting, digital literacy for homeschooling courses, as well as webinars and a free newsletter that you can subscribe to that will keep you up to date with what's going on in the world of social media and how it affects our athletes. They're also on social media themselves at HS Social Media on Facebook and Twitter. Listen, kids, parents, coaches, do yourself a favor. Go online right now. SocialStudentAthletes.com. Once again, that's SocialStudentAthletes.com.
Hanging over my head, problem after problem. When they're piling up there, it's hard to get to the bottom. She said, well, lay low, boy. Go on, take it slow, boy.
Welcome, everybody. This week, we got another amazing guest.
Be easy. I know this world's freezing. My love keeps you breathing. You know what I'm saying?
Soccer world, but we have with us George Christopher, who I've got to start this off by saying I feel really, really bad because George and I have been Facebook friends for a good while. We had mutual friends, and at the time, kind of like Nick and myself, we had never met, but we just had mutual coaching friends. So, you know, we became Facebook friends, commented every now and then, liked posts, things like that. And I went to observe a combine 2 weeks ago, and there were two coaches that who were leading the combine. I was there just observing, and you know, and I made small talk with both coaches, and I know that I heard the names, but I know it escaped me probably 10 minutes in because for myself it was super, super, super cold, and I couldn't really remember anything. I really wanted to get to my hotel room, but
it's cold.
That's really cool. 2 days later, I'm getting on my Facebook. And I see that George checked in at the Pro Football Hall of Fame soccer fields where I was at as well on Friday night and said that he had was running a combine. And then I just responded, no crap, so was I. And then it dawned on me, oh, my God, like I probably met him and did not say anything because there was only five of us out there. And I felt so bad, so bad, so bad. And I think I sent you a direct message.
Well, it was like mutual too. Feeling was really mutual because as soon as I saw you walking out, I was like, I know that guy.
Well, you probably were like, man, that dude's really, really short. So that probably is what threw it off. But yeah, I direct messaged him just instantly. It was like, oh my God, I am so sorry. Like this is what we get for just being Facebook friends and never like truly meeting. Or either one of us being like, oh, hey, we're friends on Facebook. I know who you are. Like, oh, that's right. That's right.
I think in our career path that happens a lot more than we might think.
Yeah, because I've always had in my head like how I was going to introduce myself to you because I'm always like George Christopher, the man with two first names, and I just never did it, and now that joke won't even work. But I went to in front of everybody apologize because I don't even know how that happened.
No need. No need at all. I just appreciate you guys taking the time to sit down and chat and talk about soccer.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about soccer. Let's go with let's go a little bit into your playing career and into your coaching career. How'd you get to where you're at now?
I'd say, you know, it all started probably when I was younger. You know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, went to school kind of on the east side and, had great parents who obviously supported me in the game. And I think it was early on, just kind of really grasped the game, mostly after school. Cause I was a latchkey kid or after school program kid. So my parents worked till, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock. And, so after school, we just go outside and had a bunch of friends who were just into taking a volleyball and just playing five a side. And we'd play in the gym, we'd play in the grass, and that just kind of turned into us, forming a team to go play indoor. And, you know, we did really well, and from there, just jumped into the club scene and really enjoyed it. Had some good club coaches growing up. You know, I really think that, you know, it's kind of funny right now in soccer. You know, Columbus is kind of a trendy little topic with the crew leaving and everything, but I don't think people really understand how much, you know, Ohio itself is really a soccer state. You know, it produces a lot of good players, but it also produces a lot of coaches and a lot of good ambassadors to the game that have so much knowledge. I mean, you look at just in the Division I world, you know, we've got University of Akron. I mean, if not one of the best Division I schools in the country.
They're the big dog for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, can you see the matchup coming up with Louisville and Akron coming up is phenomenal. I think if people really look, you know, because Ken was at Akron for a good long time. And I remember when I was growing up and he was there, that was kind of like the pinnacle growing up is, oh, I want to be at Akron and, you know, be a part of what they're doing. And to kind of see it all still kind of come back full circle, especially right now in the day's game, is kind of cool. But, you know, growing up, I got pretty lucky to play with some really good players. Some went on to play Division One and kind of fizzle out after that, you know. I think Eric Bruner was one that comes to mind. Got to play with him growing up, and he went on to play. He played where did he get drafted? I think he got drafted in New York. I think it was the MetroStars, the Red Bulls at the time. Finished out playing. Obviously, Daniel O'Rourke was one. He played for the Crew for a long time. I think he was a fan favorite. So kind of growing up.
He was a Hoosier too, wasn't he?
Oh, Hermann Trophy winner, man.
Yes, sir.
And I mean, he was a great guy to play with growing up. I mean, I was a goalkeeper, so to have him just in the midfield at times and drop in, you know, you always felt comfortable that he was either going to, you know, take a guy out or he's going to be able to move the ball well, and he did both. And luckily, he got to go to Indiana and, you know, really perfect his craft and be noted as one of the best college players in Division One that year, and you know, obviously go into the MLS and play. But, you know, just got being fortunate to grow up and play around a lot of those guys, you know, coaching. You know, we got a lot of knowledge and a lot of coaching and a lot of insights early on that, you know, back growing up, you know, not a lot of guys were playing soccer or basketball, football, and, you know, other things. But so I was fortunate. And then I went to Urbana University for a year, which I'd say was kind of my, like, time where I really made a decision on, did I really want to play soccer anymore or play? Because it wasn't a good decision when I went there. And so I decided to transfer and go actually transfer to the school I'm head coaching at right now, Muskingum. Went to play for a phenomenal coach, really underrated. Not really known the name, Seamus Riley, and great story behind that guy. He was born in Ireland, but he immigrated to Manchester, England, and had a great career. He was one of the youngest players to ever win the dribble, pass, and shoot competition at Man United, or the equivalent of it at the time. And you know, I went to play for him in Division Three, obviously, and so there was that kind of stigma at the time, Division Three. But ended up going there. Did very well. We actually went to the conference tournament for the school time and school history, most wins, set a couple goalkeeping records there, and really fell in love with the game. And then from there I realized, hey, I really love this game. I want to make a career out of it. And you know, from there I just kind of put my head down, you know, knew I had to do a lot of hard work from what he said. You know, you got to, you know, talk to a lot of people, you got to learn a lot, you got to watch a lot, and really perfect your craft as being a teacher of the game rather than being a coach. I think that was the thing I learned from him the most. And you know, from there, just took opportunities working in club. Got to work with Billy Thompson at the Crew Academy. And then I'm fortunate to get an opportunity to go get my master's in West Virginia at Concord University. And I think that's kind of when I started to really learn about the world of coaching and the kind of the circle I'm in now. Because, I mean, we played Aulus and Broadus down there, which you have a connection to. And then watching those trends kind of go forward, it really helps you kind of see the picture of where you want to go and coach. And then, you know, getting the opportunity to get a first head coaching job I was 24 years old, at the Teal College in Pennsylvania. And, you know, spent a year up there, learned how it works, learned how the college game works of being a head coach and not just an assistant. And then lo and behold, about 4 years ago, Seamus called me and said he resigned, and he gave me the nod that if I wanted the job, he'd put a good word in for me. And, you know, at the time I was kind of thinking I wasn't ready to step into the OAC conference. It's a really tough Division III conference. I mean, this year we set three teams in the national tournament. I think there was only one other conference that sent more than us, which was the AAU. And so all those little things were swarming in my head of, you know, being young, do I want to step into a really tough Division III conference? And, you know, I figured, you know, the best way to learn is to sometimes just go swim with the sharks, you know, learn from there. And I've been there ever since, and trying to build a program and trying to kind of rebrand it and revamp it and compete in probably one of the toughest conferences. So kind of long story short, that's kind of my life with soccer so far, but hopefully it's still just the beginning. You know, who knows where it'll take you.
And now my second apologies. For whatever reason, I swore that your name was actually George Christopher.
And it's actually, yeah, my first name's George, but I had a stigma growing up that wasn't too popular. Because I got Georgie Porgy and all that stuff. So I remember.
So I'm sitting here like staring at you. I'm sitting here staring at your last name on our chat. And I'm like, who is this guy? I don't recognize this name. This is not George Christopher.
It's actually.
So I was going to say, so please properly introduce yourself, because I am a jerk and don't do my research well enough.
I mostly know go by Chris, Chris Limley. People who know me close call me George. Most of my coaches growing up called me George because they knew that would get under my skin a little bit. But I figured the older you get, the more prestige you get. So I just go by my first name, mostly on all, you know, being on social media, trying not to give too much away. So I just go by George Christopher. But
totally makes Chris. Sense. Okay. So, yeah. Nick, sorry for telling you George Christopher for like 2 weeks.
The best,
his name
best
is Chris.
Was I went to the website and you said, like, you're like, hey, he's the head coach at Muskegon. First, you spelled it wrong when you sent it to me. So I was looking
obviously.
Muskegon University, which does not exist. And I stumbled upon Muskegon. And then me and George became friends about 5 minutes before we started recording. And I was able to see his face and match it to the head coach at Muskegon University for the men's program. And so I was all good at that point. I was all set. I was like, I know who we're talking to. We're all set. I had questions based off of the lack of information that I have, but now I have plenty of information. Got some great questions coming as well.
Awesome. So let's get some of those questions.
No, for sure. What have you noticed, like, before we get into the actual Division III world, what have you noticed recently within the past few years? You talked about some of the changes with Ohio being more of a soccer hotbed going forward, and a lot of people are very interested in developing programs right now. What are some of the changes that you've noticed being there at Ground Zero, seeing it in first person?
Wow, that's a loaded question, but it's a great one, and I could talk about it for hours. Well, I think one of the biggest changes that's kind of evolving right now is you've got a generation of men and women who are in their, you know, 25 to 35 and 40 year old range, who are now kind of coming down from being the player more mentality and now going into coaching. And you're just seeing that transition into club, to high school, to college. They're getting opportunities to kind of, you know, take a little bit of something they love, their passion, and be able to kind of utilize it a little bit from not just being a player. And that's also, I think, opened up opportunities for more facilities to allow people to play more. I mean, we've got a great facility in Columbus called Super Kicks that, you know, the Columbus crew would use as a training facility. But, you know, they've got a great staff that's got, you know, obviously everyone on staff there has played in the college level or after. You know, you got Resolute. You've got a bunch of indoor facilities that are catering to allowing the game to be played a lot more. And it just keeps growing. And I think that transitions into club, the competitive club level and the recreational level. I mean, we've got more kids now playing soccer than any other sport in the country. And I think that's a huge asset to the generation we have now that are trying to invest in the game. And, you know, we were actually, it's funny you brought that up. I was just at a college talk with our club, Ohio Premier. And, you know, we were talking to and kind of guiding parents into, you know, what are the right questions to ask? You know, what's the pathway to go? You know, what? A lot of people don't really know, but the funny part was at the end, you know, a lot of people are in the same loop and kind of understand college athletics and especially soccer, because they're just more interested. There's more information out there. And with kids nowadays, they're just more able to just watch it more. They're able to, you know, get on quickly and watch a YouTube clip. You know, they can go out and watch, you know, a 4-4-2 clip of their favorite player or whatever it is. And I think that's helping the game evolve. And in Ohio, you know, you've got such a strong sports culture too, you know, with Ohio State and Columbus, and, you know, you go to the foot, you know, more of the American football, you've got the Bengals and you've got the Browns. And I think that all comes in full circle when you look at the game of soccer, because we've got a huge generation that loves sport and they find that soccer is just a more attractive sport nowadays. And, you know, when you go into the college game now, you know, start Division III, you got two huge Division III conferences in the state of Ohio, the NCAC, and then obviously the OAC. And there's a little rivalry, I'd say, between the two of them. You know, the OAC tends to kind of get overshadowed a little bit because of football, because they have that Mount Union kind of stigma to them. Mount Union's a dominant enforcer in football. And then you go to the NCAC, you know, they have high academics and they have really a prestigious soccer program too, with, you know, Ohio Wesleyan. That's, you know, they, I think they just made their, what, 40th straight NCAA tournament appearance, which is just unheard of. You know, they have the all-time winningest coach in Jay Martin. You know, then you go to Kenyon with Chris Brown, who's, you know, put a program, you know, past 4 or 5 years, has always been, you know, going in and out of the top 10 in the country. And so when you look at just Division III and having all those options of almost like 16 schools of Division III for kids to play at, you know, there's a place to go play. You know, it isn't just, oh, well, if you're not going to Division I, you know, there's, you know, you can go to Division II, and, you know, you've got, I think we were counting tonight, I think there's like 10 Division II schools just in the state of Ohio and two different conferences. It was funny, actually, at Muskingum, we hosted the GMAC tournament. I think, you know, AB was close to coming to Muskingum, I think. Until who'd you guys lose to? Who was it?
Cedarville,
that's right. You know, we hosted the GMAC conference at our facility, and we got to watch, you know, Ohio Valley and Findlay, Ohio Dominican play. So you've just got so many schools that are able to offer a little bit of scholarship money if it's available. And then obviously you go to Division I, you've got just in Cincinnati, you've got what, Northern Kentucky, University of Dayton, Xavier. Who else am I missing? UC. There's so many Division I schools just in the greater Cincinnati area that you just have kids able to go and just watch a Division I game, go watch a Big East game. They can watch a Horizon League game at Wright State. That's one I forgot too, you know, and then you transition up north. Obviously you've got, in Ohio North, you got Akron and Cleveland State, who I think both of them play a very complementary style of play. I mean, when you look at the whole big picture of the state, there's so much information and so much differences of the game, but all come together that, you know, it's just all around us. It's really hard to find that when you kind of go more, when you go more east, there's a lot of schools, but they're just so compact and there's able to go to different states. When Ohio, it's just all right here. So
you definitely have a good time or a good I would say an accurate description of when it comes to Ohio soccer, because I know growing up, Ohio was kind of viewed as like, if you're going to play, that's the place, to go and learn. And we see what happens with when the U.S. team plays in Columbus. You know, it's just an absolute, I've always said that I think that Columbus should be the actual home of the U.S. soccer national team compared to Los Angeles, because there's no environment like it. How much of Ohio's success over the years is credited, or should be credited, I guess I should ask, to that of Patrick McGinnis?
if I had to, if I have to speak to Pat right now, I'd say that he had a tremendous impact in that. now, if we didn't have the chat, I'd probably put some more things into it. But I've known Pat. Pat, it's funny, Pat grew up in Upper Arlington. I didn't grow too far away from him. And I heard he played down in West Virginia, and he transitioned to that into coaching. So, he's another figure that we have in the state of a guy who, really loves the game, really tried to find a way to keep it in his life and found a way to play and coach and grow up and doing what he does. So, as a professional and as someone, as a colleague, I call him, he's a fun guy to be around. He's got so much knowledge and obviously very opinionated, if we all know the same Pat. So, but he's always the type of guy where if, you really want to get into a deep conversation about the game, maybe referees, I was always picking on him. You should have seen him at the GMAC final or the semifinal or the final it was when they played Ohio Valley. I think that was the most animated I've ever seen him on the sidelines. And it transitions to his team though. He wears his heart on his sleeve. And so when you see him giving his all on the sideline coaching and getting the game, that was what I think was one of the reasons why they got so unlucky and not winning it. But, he's definitely infectious with it, with what he can do. So I'm a positive guy.
So he's as big in Ohio as he says that he is.
Oh, I'm sure in his head he is, but I think if he went and stood in the middle of Cincinnati or Columbus, he might have to, say his name about 3, 4, 5 times. If he's kind of said, oh yeah, sure.
So would you, what's more likely to happen? Patrick McGinnis becomes the governor of Ohio, or he becomes the Ohio Youth Soccer Association president?
He'll be the governor of Ohio, no doubt. And then he'll use that tool to try to increase soccer in the state, no doubt about it. So he'll pass every bill he can to try to make sure that every kid has to bring a soccer ball to school. I'm sure that he'll find these little ways to make sure that the game grows. That's for sure.
So, Sean, I actually got to meet Patrick at the Indianapolis showcase.
I'm sorry.
And I think he's back in the line for me. I mean, we had some great combos. I don't know. He grew on me a lot in the 30 minutes that I spent with him on the sideline. I'll pull a Charlie Conway and sacrifice my jersey so Patrick can be back in the lineup for
How much did he pay you to get back on the team?
No, $0. This is all from the heart right now. I just want to make a sincere apology. I liked him a lot more than I thought I was initially going to like him.
I don't believe this. I don't believe this right now. You've been one of the strong standards against Patrick playing, and in the span of one day, now you're like, oh my God, I'm giving my jersey.
I think it was just his face. Like, I saw his face, and there was just something about it that, like, I just wanted to, like, before I met him in person, I just wanted to, like, punch him. But, like, he's good enough.
If you ever do see him in person, go mess up his hair.
Don't touch his hair. Don't touch his hair. Oh, my God. That's the last thing you want.
And I also realized he's a lot bigger than me, so that was another battle that I wanted to pick. It's a slight fear factor as well. But going back to questions, what I was actually going to ask this a little bit later, but kind of going into it now, one of the things we run into a huge like issue with when we were trying to get recruits to come play for us, because when I took over, we didn't necessarily have a good record, and there are similar to Ohio, and not nearly as condensed as what you are, but there's a lot of schools in Illinois, whether it's D3, D2, D1, and you go to Wisconsin, Iowa. I mean, there's a lot of people vying for a lot of the same prospects. What have you been trying to do to kind of differentiate yourself and get higher quality kids to come to you guys?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, you know, I've worked at two Division III schools, and each have their own little niche at, you know, kind of what they're known for. You know, right now, being at Muskingum, you know, we have a rich tradition in graduating a lot of people who go into education. And, you know, when I decided to take that position, you really have to think about how you're going to go recruit top players, and not necessarily trying to guide them into trying to be a professional, but guide them into what they're going to do in their professional life and career outside of soccer. And, you know, Muskingum had a rich tradition in education, graduated a lot of teachers who got into higher education, middle child education, special education. And the funny part is a lot of those graduates have transitioned into coaching. You'd be really surprised if you go on and look at a lot of graduates of Muskingum who've gone on to coach in like the WNBA, the NBA, they're coaching in the NFL. And that clicked for me that I can probably find, you know, that type of person, that player who maybe wants to come in and maybe be a math teacher, but then also coaches high school soccer team. And I found in my, you know, experience, sometimes those have been some of the best players I played with, people who want to go in and teach, and that translates into coaching. So when I really have gone out and looked at, you know, players when we go recruit on the recruiting trips and trails, you know, I've really zoned in on players who are interested in becoming teachers, who want to focus in on education. And that's been a real help. I think obviously the big one that's got kind of a yay or nay to it is, you know, we have a niche over in Europe with Germany, which helps us out tremendously, bringing in a little bit more quality. Then also trying to look at, you know, where the direction the university wants to go with diversity and trying to see what we can do to help. Obviously the game of soccer is obviously the most popular sport in the world, but, you know, we can definitely have a niche of bringing over people from Europe or people from Scandinavia that want to try to, you know, see what it's like to be in this country. And found out too that some of them, you know, have the potential to play professionally, maybe not in the MLS. You know, a little funny story, when I was at Concord University doing my master's, I was able to find a player over in England named Ryan Ford, and Ryan ended up coming over, and funny enough, through the NCAA clearinghouse, which is fantastic, by the way, not really. Ryan wasn't able to play for the first 8 games, but then after he was able to play for our last 9, he ended up still becoming an all-conference player his freshman year. He ended up transferring after that to Marshall, and ended up his senior year captaining Marshall his last season, and then played professionally for FC Indiana and Indiana. So, you know, there's an opportunity for those players from Europe and around to come here and maybe come into a Division II, Division III, or Division I and continue playing. And I think obviously if you keep that in mind, that's going to help you build your team, build your squad, and also build chemistry. You know, a lot of players growing up in this country too, they want to play with other players, especially who have a different background, you know, maybe different knowledge, different experiences, and that'll help grow your team chemistry, help build bonds. Funny, I had a player this year who was from Munich, Germany on our team, and it was funny because the guys who I have from Ohio really kind of brought him into the crew culture, you know, brought him to the two playoff games we've had, you know, took him to crew games, and he fell in love with the team, fell in love with the culture, and kind of fell in love with the movement that's going on too. And, you know, he's going to go back in a year, and he's going to have a piece of, you know, obviously playing at Muskingum, but he's going to have a piece of Columbus there. And, you know, that just brings in the big picture in college, more experiences for him.
That's awesome. How has your experience been there with the teams that you guys have had and some of the things that you guys have accomplished, like, and things that you're looking to accomplish going forward?
Well, it's been interesting because when I walked into Muskingum, there was a lot of transition that was going to occur, and you know, I stepped into a position that was pretty tough. Didn't have a lot of support at first, and you know, over my tenure there, you know, so far we've just our university just installed a multi-purpose turf facility up there, right next to our grass field. So we kind of have now a soccer complex with a grass field and turf field, and obviously that's helping me with recruiting and helping build up the program. This year we were able to have our first graduate assistant in the program, so I have more staff, more help, not just volunteers and part-times. And that transition just occurred in the past kind of year and a half to 2 years, and it's going to continue to grow. So maybe the wins haven't come as much as I've wanted it to, which we all look at sometimes as coaches, but you know, when you really want to do change in a small school and program, you got to start really from the bottom, and it might not be necessarily what you do on the field. It's what you do off the field to make the school attractive to the players you want to bring in the future. And that's really where I kind of rolled my sleeves up and got started, is starting having conversations with administration, started having conversations with our athletic director, and really showing them my vision of the game and where it's at. Because, you know, long story short, we still work in a world where not a lot of people really understand what soccer could do for everybody, especially in college. You know, it's a really good eye opener to help things. And so I've really started there. And, you know, this season was my real first year, I'd say, that I brought in a class of about 16 freshmen from all around the region of the Midwest, from Michigan to Kentucky to Indiana, Pennsylvania. And we've really good, great guys who, you know, really just need to get coached a little bit on the mental side of the game, the physicality and speed of play, speed of thought and all that. But, you know, we had a really great year of developing that. And, you know, we put high standards on for next year. And, you know, I'm kind of putting my foot in my mouth a little bit when I say that we're going to probably be a really tough contender for the conference next year. So
I was going to say, like, looking at your roster, you guys were definitely young. What were some of the things that you guys had to do throughout the year to continue to engage people and really get them to buy into what you guys are trying to do, obviously with a mix of people that have already been established at the program before you were there and people that you're bringing in at the same time?
Yeah, building that was kind of one of my first goals when I first stepped in there, was to try to connect the alumni to what we were doing. There was a small disconnect between the alumni, the soccer program, and the university. So first thing I had to do is really start connecting to it. And that's where social media was phenomenal. You know, just putting up a Facebook group for men's soccer alumni and just getting it out there for people to join and get them connected. You know, that enabled us to really see the players really got to see, wow, you know, there are people here who are still playing. You know, like I said, we have a good group of guys who still play in Germany that speak very highly of the university. To have them come and, you know, be around training at some times and to come back for, you know, alumni day and things like that, the players really start to see, wow, you know, I'm not just playing for myself, I'm playing for a bigger cause, a bigger picture. And I think this year, you know, having more alumni start to come back on a daily basis, not just once a year, but on a daily basis, you know, just for the day to come in and talk to them in the locker room, you know, come in and be at a game and maybe give a pregame talk. And just getting those people engaged really gave the sense for these young guys of, okay, I'm not here just playing for myself, I'm playing for a bigger cause, I'm playing for a program, and not just a team, but a program that has, you know, maybe not necessarily the wins and losses that every other school might have, but just the ability to say that I'm playing for something bigger. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Muskingum is one of the oldest small schools in the country. You know, 1837 was our foundation. So I'd be naive to say that they haven't been playing soccer there since, you know, early 1900s. So there is a lot of people who have, you know, that have touched down in Muskingum. Well, it's funny, actually, I found a small fact when I was doing my research that Bob Bradley, when he was starting out coaching, he was at Ohio University, and he actually coached the club team at Ohio University. I think it was 1980 it was. And actually, one of his first games he ever took the OSU club team was to Muskingum. And I actually found the score. It was 9-0 OSU's club team. But that's a big thing for my guys to see that someone with his prestige, you know, being the first American coach to coach in the EPL, and to have him know that, you know, when he started coaching and getting his feet wet, you know, he touched down on Muskingum. You know, showing young people that gives them the ability to feel confident that, oh man, this is a big thing. So I think that's been really the biggest thing that I've really been able to connect this year that's helped the guys grow with camaraderie and grow with chemistry.
You've talked to, at the combine, we're kind of going on about like the status of U.S. soccer and the future and the things that, that need to take place or the people who need to get in place. And you were very, I don't want to say opinion, but very knowledgeable and had a lot of good ideas and had a lot of opinions on the matter. And a lot of it did have to deal with college soccer as well. I thought you made some really excellent points if you care to share on some of those.
Yeah.
And if I open up a soapbox, I'm sorry.
No.
But this is the topics that's, you know, this is what's going on with our country and the sport that we all love.
Well, we're unique, you know, from just, and I'm not trying, and I'm still a young person and I'm still young, but I feel like soccer is my life. So I tend to just gravitate to what's ever on. Funny enough, I'm sitting here as I'm talking to you guys. I'm watching the Bayern Munich Gladbach game right now. Because there's such a, you know, Gladbach's got such a string on Bayern Munich. But anyway, you know, soccer in this country with college, we have a unique situation with college soccer. You know, it really breeds a unique type of athlete, you know, a very mature athlete. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations going on today of you know, do really good players need to skip college and go straight into, you know, developmental academies, and where do they lead them? And, you know, should they skip that and go overseas? And there's a lot of ins and outs we're learning, you know, like, you know, people are like, oh, why don't we just, you know, Christian Pulisic got to go to Europe at 16. Why don't we just lift all that up? Well, there's a lot more into it than just doing that. We have a unique opportunity to really breed some great athletes for the game of soccer because they're getting such a reinforcement of that student athlete mentality, you know, being a student first, athlete second. And that breeds maturity because when you see a lot of players, I think we talked about a little about Jordan Morris, you know, Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
Decision to stay at Seattle or stay at Stanford and then not take any contract over in Europe because he really believed that was the best development for him. And, you know, you're watching right now how it's paying off. You know, he's one example. And, you know, you can go to many examples of guys who are in our, you know, are in the Federation now and not necessarily working in coaching, but they're working behind the scenes. You know, we got so many guys who played at UVA. You know, Bruce Arena was a coach at UVA. And there's a lot of substance to the college game that's bred to where we're at. I mean, take it away right now, it's a very negative culture because we didn't qualify for the World Cup. But I remember there was a point growing up in 99 where we were sitting there watching a game against Germany and we were almost, you know, well, in my eyes, the ball was over the line. So we did score a goal, but we were that close to being one of the best teams in the world that year. And we have a really unique opportunity to breed college soccer players that when they go on and go in the professional game, they're going to be more prepared to take on the struggles that come with it. Because I grew up and I remember I got players who were getting opportunities to go to Bradenton. They were getting there and they wouldn't stick long. They wouldn't be able to handle it. And it wasn't because they couldn't play. They're great players, but they just couldn't deal with the being away from home so far, you know, how to deal with being by themselves and, you know, how to take care of themselves and how to make good decisions. And when you're young and you don't have that guidance, it can be very tough to make that jump straight to the professional level. I mean, look at Freddie Adu. That's a perfect example. You know, if Freddie could have just maybe just gone into a good college program and maybe got 4 years of maturity, you know, maybe got pegged a few times, not because he wasn't playing well, but because he wasn't being responsible, you know, that might have transitioned. Maybe or not. Maybe it might have transitioned him to, you know, maybe take a different approach when he was taking those trials. You know, that's where I think that we need to start looking at college and not looking at it as a negative, really look at it as a positive and start building around it. And I don't know. I read an article a couple of weeks ago that I think it did pass that Division I is going to start trying to go towards a full-year season.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great step in the right direction because you're going to now allow players to get the rest they need for a full year to be, you know, at the top of their game. You know, say, but I don't like the NCAA and how they treat soccer. You know, they'd like, hey, play 18 games in 3 months. All right, you're asking a guy to really throw his body out the window after a month and a half because you're asking him to run like a half marathon every week. A marathon every 2 weeks.
You know, well, it's more than that governing body too. Because if you think about high school soccer, how many games are they playing in the span of 2 months? You know, let's see, what was it last year? You know, last year my club team scheduling their games. We were given 3 months worth of games to schedule, but we were told there was a month and a half of weekends that we couldn't schedule games because of State Cup tournament. So now we have to cram pack and we have to play multiple games on Saturdays, multiple games on Sundays. We're playing 2-3 times a week, and yet like there's no rest time.
Yep, and there's no time to coach either. And I think that's the part that is the most important. And you know, I think we have the right ideas that we should, you know, do more coaching and play less. But we need to look at the playing aspect and what we can do to increase that more. Because, you know, I'm a big believer that you coach through guided discovery. You know, you take an environment, you create it for the player, and then you make it so they have to ask questions, and then you correct them and you guide them into making the right decisions. And if we get more opportunities to be, you know, game-based model and giving them the opportunity to create an environment that's more like the game and playing and training, that's going to transition a lot more over to the game when there's more pressure, it's more professional, and we need more of that time. But, you know, the one thing that if they revamp the college game to make Division 1, 2, and 3 more of a four-year season, you're going to do a lot for the athlete because, one, now they're going to have more time to go to class. You know, when you've got a game on, on Wednesday, then you got a game on Saturday, and then you got to go back on Wednesday, and then you're going to train 2 days a week, and you got one recovery day, and then you got one day to prep. You know, you're not giving that them able time to really spend time and focus in on their studies. By now, when you're only going to play nine games, maybe in non-conference, you know, they're going to play one game a week. You're going to focus in on training. They're still going to be able to get their studies in. It's going to allow them to grow and develop and mature a lot faster. And we need to see that in the college game and see how that benefits the big game in the picture, because I think that's going to grow the professional side. We're going to have more prepared professionals, and then that will allow them to be able to really take the game. And if they can only play for 2 or 3 years because that's when they peak, so be it. But then they're going to be prepared afterwards to go on and do something else. And, you know, you look in Europe and you see a lot of players who don't make it. The ones who stick with it and still have fun, you know, they had something else to really buy into when soccer didn't really peak the way they wanted to. And we need to develop a model that gives those players the opportunity to also get there, but also if something doesn't happen, they're prepared to step into the world of, you know, being a nurse or being a dentist or being a firefighter, or, you know, being a teacher, you know, some way. And we just are really dysfunctional with that right now because we're asking, you know, Division One players to step right into a professional world, and they might not just be prepared yet mentally, maybe not physically, maybe not necessarily with coaching with the game. I mean, obviously there's a big gap. I'm not going to be naive and say there isn't a big gap between it, but we can just do little things like that in this country because we have the ability to.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it goes with, like, I mean, you look at currently now the NBA fighting the whole one and done thing, because right. A lot of those kids who do go to school for 1 year, they're just there to go play basketball and then they're done. They don't even go for the spring semester. Those kids, a very high percentage of them, don't understand what it means to be a professional. A lot of them don't last very long. I think it was, I don't even remember the year, but there was 1 year where there was, I'll say it was like the first year there was a ton of one and dones in the first round, and there was like 10 or something like that, I think. And or not 10. I think in the first two rounds there was like 10 or whatever. And I think only like two of those guys are still in the NBA today.
Yeah.
So it's just like, that's like the whole like maturity thing and understanding. I had a kid that I coached years ago in high school that kept telling me, I want to be a pro soccer player. I want to be a pro soccer player. And I was like, I understand you want to be a soccer player, but you don't understand what it means to be a professional. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something like, I really like your idea of this whole, with the full calendar year season of letting them understand what it's like to be an adult and learn to, you know, to be in the classroom constantly and have proper time to recover and focus on, you know, the things that they're supposed to be focusing on at that time, rather than, oh, we got two games this week, we got to travel, are we going to fly, we're going to bus, what's that going to take? I got to get these assignments with my professors lined up for my trip. Which brings me to my point of, should there be some type of person that moderates between the college soccer game and with a USSS or US soccer official, and should you be that person?
Oh, I think if you gave me the right salary, I'd do it in a heartbeat, because yeah. It's definitely something that gets lost in the conversation a lot is what are we going to do with college soccer? Are we just going to let it fall to be you know, just the rec program of young adults, or can we use this as a tool? And I think more people nowadays, even in the professional game, want to not really give credit where credit's due with college soccer. And, you know, to me, I think if you put someone in the position to just have that in between the Federation and Division One soccer, and I think we've got someone, not myself, I think his name slipped in my mind, head coach of the University of Maryland right now.
Sasha.
Yeah, Sasha, I think he's the one that I think would be the best, because he was really on the forefront of getting this model of a four-year season in front. And there were other people as well, but I think he would be the best spokesman for it, because he has a real good passion and fire to really believe in college soccer. I mean, you guys.
I was in the Division I coaches meeting room whenever he like first brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, he's got such a. I mean, obviously, he's a fiery guy, and that translates to his training and coaching and all that. But you know, he definitely sees the same vision I have of how important it is. I mean, to be fair, you know, he runs a very, very good program that goes over, you know, and plays in Europe in preseasons. You know, Indiana and Ohio State and Maryland and ACC Big East and Big Ten schools. You know, they're not. It's not like they're just sitting here playing, you know, just Division I college games. They're going and testing themselves. You know, even Division III. You know, my friend of mine, Travis Wall, is the associate head coach at Ohio Wesleyan. You know, he took his team over to Germany this year, and it's a tradition that they do that. But you know, they're getting really good quality games over there, and they bring them over here, and that level is giving the players the opportunity to see what they can be or see what where the game's coming from. But that's giving them the ability to have that environment that's or giving them the picture and seeing the environment that's in front of them to grow and build here.
Yeah. But I think
more schools are starting to buy into that too.
Yeah. What I think is kind of an important thing that you guys touched on, I think a lot of this goes back to having good mentors too, because I think that there are a lot of college coaches that can be smart enough to take a kid and know when to let him go. I think Calipari is great at it. I mean, if you've ever watched his things, like it's all about he's going to send you to the pros when you're ready. If it's after your freshman year, he'll send you there then. If it's after your sophomore year, he'll send you there then. And I think it was cool. One of the articles I read, it was sometime last year when Roosevelt was starting to, who's a Cincinnati girl, she was starting to like make everyone's eyes open with like just her ability to be super creative, meg people in the middle of her first game. And there's an article that came out that was talking about how their Paul Wilkins, the head coach of Wisconsin, got a call from the national team. And at the time, they were asking her, like, it was Rose's, I think, sophomore or junior year, and they started asking her, like, is she ready for the call-up to the first team? And Paula, like, with Rose in the room, said, no, she's not ready yet. She's not committed. Like, her diet's not good enough. She hasn't made the commitment to be a full women's national team player. And, like, and I remember that reading the article, and, like, apparently Rose was obviously super pissed at Coach Wilkins. But it's one of those things that it got her to the point where she ended up being the number one draft pick and is now getting caps and different things like that. And I do think you need those coaches that are willing to have those tough conversations, but are also willing to let players go when they're ready.
I think you're spot on about it. And that's, I think also a testament to the coaches who are not necessarily the tacticians or the training coaches. They're the good man managers. They know how to push the right buttons in certain people to get the best out of them. And I think that's a great example of Rose there is, you know, that's a moment where you changed her career. You really did. And you knew exactly how to do it and tell her the truth. And she took it and ran with it and grasped it and had that kind of prove you wrong. But I do say this, there's a lot of players that you couldn't do that to, especially in our generation of players today. I think there's, you know, you can look at the men's game and see that there's players that you kind of have to always pat on the back to get the best out of them at. And I think that's kind of a lost art sometimes in coaching is you don't see the man managers really getting credit where credit's due. You know, coaches just want to, there's a lot of coaches who just love to be the limelight and be, yeah, I'm the head coach. I run the training sessions. I run the games and that. But the best coaches I've been to are great man managers. I know growing up I had some really good young coaches who, you know, I'd want to be, hey, like, I want to do this. I want to do that. Oh, you're not ready yet. You're not ready yet. No, that's not in your forte. Don't do that. And I'd always be like, why? But then I would always get an opportunity to see why I wouldn't be able to. And I could either choose to you know, not listen to them, like go one or the other, or, you know, really run with that information. So.
Is it okay to admit that, like, I think the coach you described, like, I can sit here, I can train a team, but I'm not like the super, like, super technical teacher wizard. I truly view myself as like the manager. Like I can get people hyped up. I can get them where they need to go and the reasons to get there. Like to you guys, like, is that a bad thing to admit? Like if somebody's like, oh, what type of coach are you? Well, I'm more of a manager.
No, I don't. I mean, my opinion, no, I think, you know, you don't get the coach who's the best at everything. I mean, look, you know, I not that I know Pep Guardiola, but you can kind of, he wears his emotions.
No, it's okay. You can admit that you know him.
he you know, you can tell as a manager he wears his emotions on his sleeve, and then you watch a lot of his training sessions. He's a very, you know, he's very engaged, very detail oriented, and, you know, really, really holds a high standard to everybody who's out there. But then what you don't see so much where I think he really is a great man manager, you know, to get the best out of you know, I'll be honest with you. I love how he's coaching the company right now and all the adversity that guy's gone through. You know, he's have to man manage him because a lot of managers would step into that role with company and he'd probably be sold already at Man City. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big part of coach. I think, you know, obviously in the men's game, you're looking at Jose Mourinho. I think he's one of the best man managers, not necessarily one of the best maybe tacticians or anything, but mm-hmm. a man manager is something I think, you know, as a game in this country, we don't give credit too much where credit's due. And I think a lot of those man manager coaches kind of don't get the recognition they deserve as much because they're the ones who will sit down and say, hey, let's go sit down. Let's talk about things. Let's go sit down and you tell me what you want. Let me help guide you there. And I think going back to kind of my comment about coaching and teaching, I think some of the best man managers are some of the best teachers. They know how to teach them and not just look at the immediate goal, but look at the long-term goal that they're trying to and set them up for success that way. I think we, and to be honest with you, a lot of the best coaches that I've had were teachers, you know, and I remember when I started out doing my coaching courses through the
United Indiana, Soccer Coaches.
The United Soccer Coaches of United Soccer Coaches. You know, I met a guy and his name slips my mind, but you know, he was a high school teacher. He had coached in college and he was just doing NCAA coaching courses, but he just said, nope, I enjoy coaching high school soccer because I get to really work with the players. He's like, yep, we win some, we lose some. He's like, but I just enjoy knowing that I'm going to get a team every year. I can coach them. I can talk to them. I can watch them graduate. And he enjoyed that so much. I mean, he had coached at the Division I level. He was a professional, but he just enjoyed teaching. And those are the people that need to get more involved with our federation, the guys who can really guide them, like you said, Nick. Like, they're the ones who I think we need to start looking to embrace more and have those hard conversations.
Yeah, I think, well, one of the things I talk with a lot of coaches, not just in our sport, but across a lot of different sports, is I always joke that you need to be good at three things to be a good college soccer coach or to be a good coach in general at the college level. You have to be able to recruit, you have to be able to run a practice, and you have to be able to put the right people at the right spots at the right time. And
right.
I think that it's funny because I know plenty of coaches that are very bad at one of those things and are very good at two of those things that have super successful programs. Like, you ask them to run a session and you'd be like, all right, that doesn't make any sense. I have no idea why you're doing what you're doing, but they have really good talent and they put them on the right spots of the field and they're phenomenal. And so I think with that, like you said, I think that you have to have, in order to be successful, you have to have the ability to just put the people in the right spots and kind of get out of their way at times.
Well, Meatloaf once saying that, you know, sometimes two out of three ain't bad.
Two out of three ain't bad. But yeah, what are some of the things that you guys I've been trying to implement in terms of different tactics and different styles that you're trying to do with your current team?
Well, you want to go, Sean?
Hey, yeah, you, all you.
Well, I coach for a competitive club called Ohio Premier in Columbus. And, you know, we have a great culture there, a great staff, great director, great directors of coaching. And they've all, most of them have played the professional game. You know, our boys side, you know, he was played in the MLS, played for the Crew. You know, our associate director, you know, he was Billy Thompson. He was, you know, obviously played for the national team and played for the Crew. And, you know, we have a good culture there that allows us to kind of set a foundation for how we want to play as a club. So we've been actually talking about, you know, what's the best formation. You know, we've all agreed that we want to be a club that's, you know, that we want to be a possession-based soccer club. We want to, you know, if we walk away possessing the ball and creating chances, good chances after a game, we're going to be happy. I think one thing that we've been floating around with a little bit is kind of the trend right now is, you know, do we want to go with three in the back or go with four in the back? And I think, you know, I've kind of taken some time to kind of study the 3-5-2 and, you know, a little bit of the WM formation, try to understand it a little bit better and try to adapt it to my team. So I think that's one thing that I've been trying to kind of work with within our club is to try to get more of a possession-based system with maybe only three in the back. And then at the college level, it's, you know, at Division III and in the OAC conference, it's tough to try to experiment too much because, like I said, we've got so much time to just produce and get results. And I think that goes back to just doing stuff that's maybe not as necessarily creative as times. It's just more of just doing the standard Let's try to get the ball to our highest target. Let's try to build off of him. You know, let's keep the lines connected. You know, it turns to be a more of a direct game sometimes. So I think that in both teams that I coach, you know, it's fun in my career is I get to be able to, you know, work with a club that, you know, has a really good brand and really has great ideas. And we have some quality players through the whole club. So it allows us to do a little bit more tinkering and try things. In the college game, I don't get that much more time to do it. I want to do what's going to get results very quickly. And, you know, in my heart, hopefully that'll change because I'd love to be able to, you know, shock the conference and come out with a different shape sometimes that they weren't prepared for. So maybe that'll happen. I don't know.
What's your favorite team to watch? What's the mold that you would love to emulate?
Which country?
We'll go international first, and then we can go in the U.S.
I think, you know, growing up, I grew up and there was a lot of these Tetra Brazil camps and Brazil camps growing up where we watched a lot of, you know, flair and technique and touch. And so I always had a little love for kind of watching a little bit of South American football and you know, the rivalry with Brazil and Argentina and Uruguay. It was always something I enjoyed, especially all the creativity on the field, not necessarily, you know, the style as much. So I always look to try to bring in a player who's got a little bit of flair to him, which has always been fun to kind of look at. So I'd say down there, I kind of tend to be a little bit more of a fan of Argentina. I mean, obviously with Leo Messi, it's kind of and Di Maria and, you know, Suarez, but I definitely enjoy watching them play.
So what you're trying to say is if you could have, you would have recruited Nick.
I would not fit into that style at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just assuming that, you know, I mean, going back and looking at your college pictures, Nick, with the golden locks just flowing, I mean, you visually had flair.
Oh, I mean, like I passed the picture test. I think you look at me and you're like, man, that kid could be good at soccer. It just didn't quite always translate as well as I would have liked to the field.
And that's where the famous quote, and then the whistle blew, comes into play.
We actually played Ohio Northern in the Elite Eight. That I was looking through your conference, and they were a tough team. We played them, I think it was back in, 2008, we played them in the Elite Eight game.
They were a good team. They're still a good team. That's a good program. Brett Ridenour has done a phenomenal job at sustaining that program. I will say this year that they were down a little bit, but they did lose unfortunately, they lost a great player in Kurpinkov, who unfortunately wasn't the D3 player of the year. He should have been, but that kind of gave him a little bit of a slip this year. But they're one of the strongest programs in the conference, no doubt.
So with this the show, you know, we're all about the networking podcast. I actually was just going through our messages where we discovered that we saw each other for the first time. And I liked it because you were like, I just listened to my first episode of Soccer Chat. I want to be on. And it was like, all right, cool. You know, like this will be great. You know, this is all about coaching, networking, and getting people to know each other. How can other coaches get in touch with you, or how can people keep up with the things that your college team is doing?
I think the best thing is just follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Geo, G-E-O, and then my last name, L-I-M-L-E. I think I spend more time on Twitter now because of all the connections you can make there. You know, I'm very fortunate, like I said, to be around a lot of great people in this country who've shown me the game. And I take that to being very humble. And I think a lot of coaches nowadays don't want to take the humble route. You know, I think too many egos are in the game, and it really can distract you from always trying to keep that growth mentality and learn. And so, you know, I think one of the best things a lot of coaches can do to keep networking and keep talking is just stay humble. Just every person you meet, no matter who it is, and they love the game, talk to them, you know, engage them, find a way to engage it. You might learn from them that, you know, they might learn from you. And in turn, that's going to help you and help you understand, you know, different ways of learning the game. And, you know, I think that's one thing that people don't do as much when they're trying to network or try to filled their kind of circle of trust with coaches is they don't stay as humble as they can. But that's the best advice you can give anybody. Stay humble. You know, if it's, you know, Phil, who's down at the park, who's just kicking the ball around, go say hi and just see what his experiences are. You might be shocked. Or, you know, if you are sitting at Bradenton and you're watching, you know, the IMG Development Academy, you know, play. I mean, it was like 3 or 4 years ago I was down there and I got to watch Tottenham Hotspur's U17 Academy play the IMG Academy. And, you know, I was sitting around guys and the first thing I did is just say, hey, so, you know, what you doing? You know, what brought you here? And from there, the conversation flowed and I remember learning a lot. And funny is I was down there, I met Brian Mazanoff. You know, he's one of the assistants at IU. So, you know, from there, it just sparks conversations and you build forward. So,
well, it was a blast having you on. And sorry for all the confusion of not recognizing you at the combine. Sorry for not recognizing that your Facebook name was not your real name.
You know, you're not the only one to say that. My boss at times doesn't know what to call me, Chris or George or Limley, as they say. So it's probably a good thing. Maybe what's keeps me on my toes a little bit. So keep
humble. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and we wish you the best of luck this spring with your club and the fall with your college team.
No, thank you guys very much. It's a lot of fun. I've been looking forward to it all week.
So that was our weekly interview with Chris, George, Paul, whatever his name ended up being.
Ringo. let's just throw all the Beatles names out there.
And no, fantastic interview. I always love when we start a conversation, because if you guys don't know, me and Sean periodically will send each other messages during the conversations. And typically it always starts with, man, this person's fun to talk to, and it normally is about 30 seconds into the conversation, but that was one of the messages that we sent each other about 30 seconds into this conversation, that it was already going to be a fun interview. And I think the thing for me was, the thing I took away, which was really near the end of his interview, but I really resonated with me, is I like the message of be humble, because I think that we have too many coaches, and we've talked about this in the past, that think that if you're the club coach of a random team in X state, you know everything. And clearly we all don't. I mean, if we're not coaching the World Cup team, like, there's still probably a few things that we can learn from someone else. And I think that his message of doing that, and he lives it too. I mean, he talks about some of the ways that he communicates with people, some of the mentors that he's had and the things that he's learned. I think that was the biggest takeaway for me from his interview. What about you?
I agree with that, but one thing I kind of would like to add, I think sometimes there are people within U.S. soccer who don't know everything and still can possibly ask around. I think one of the cool things is he seems like a visionary. Like I said, the first time that I met him, non-Facebook related, and didn't know that I met him, we were in a conversation about, you know, the whole future of U.S. soccer and what needs to be done. And he was just making these really awesome points, some of which he made in the interview. And I was just kind of taken back by it. Like, man, like this guy really gets it. Like, he knows it. And it's not about making things better for the coaches. It's making things better for the kids in the future of our program, because we're going to have to hand the reins off to, you know, you yourself and myself. We're going to have to hand the reins off to younger coaches at some point. And the current players are going to have to hand the reins off to younger players at some point. He's just got a really good idea of what we've got to do going forward. And I think, you know, next time that we do one about like the state of U.S. soccer, he's definitely somebody that we need to have on, because I think he has a lot of great ideas and things to try that would really help us going forward. I think one of the things that a lot of people are going to take away from their conversation with him is, I know that we bring it up in a lot of shows, but you talk about hearing the passion that somebody has when they're speaking. And you get that with Chris. Yeah, you really know that he absolutely loves the game of soccer. Being at a combine or, you know, at an ID camp, I could say a lot of conversations I have with coaches, I would say maybe 40% of it is actually about soccer, because we're talking about, you know, how's your season? How's your family doing? How's the podcast going, as we get nowadays? But with Chris, it was 100% soccer and how to make soccer better, how to make the kids that he was currently working with during the combine better, how's making his college players better, how can I make my college players better, how can I make my club players better. And it was just so cool to like hear and almost be a part of the passion that somebody else has. And it's kind of talking to him too. I know we didn't really get into much in the interview, but you know, you talk about the guys who, you know, they find their niche, they find their place where they feel like they're called to be, And what he brought up, you know, he's like, I love the D3 aspect. I love where I'm at. Yeah, it's my alma mater, but I love where I'm at. And I could see myself being here for a really long time, and it just really making this program get to the top and get it to where we really want to be. So I think that there's a drive, there's a passion that you definitely sense in his voice, especially when you get him talking about like his plans and what he wants to do for his program, but not just for his program, but what he'd love to see U.S. soccer do as well.
I mean, how often do you see that though? You know, it's funny, like, cause those people are a dime a dozen. You go to events, you go to showcases, you go to any area where you're going to get a collection of coaches in the same location. And it seems like everyone knows who those people are, who the people that are super passionate, that are fun to be around, just because not only are they fun to talk to about soccer, but they just bring an energy to the room. And
yeah,
like I haven't had the chance to meet him in person yet, but I would love the chance, because you do see those people and you know exactly who they are. And I think a lot of coaches, if you guys were to poll everyone at the end of an event and say like, who's the person that you think still has the most passion for the game? I think most people would say the same people. It's not a very nuanced thing where they would pick a lot of different people. It'd be like the captain or a team when it was a super obvious pick.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are like that, and I think that, or at least in my dealings with, there's people who I know show a lot of passion, but it may not just be about soccer. I think it may be in life in general. There's a couple people who are super passionate as coaches, but as just in like passionate about life in general, that I would love to have on here one day, because I think that it would be an absolute riot. But I think. What also a majority of the people who are like that you speak of, I think are also really good people too, because how many coaches that you may not have the greatest relationship with that you know of are like that, or maybe their passion about soccer, the passion's not in the right spot. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like they're passionate, but not for the right reason. If that makes sense.
Results only.
They'll
throw other people under the bus, like 4W.
Yeah, yeah. So it's I think there's a different. God, why am I trying to talk with big words? I'm not supposed to do that. I think there's a very big difference between passions when it comes to soccer coaching, because I think there's a lot of good people who are very, very passionate. But I also think that there's a lot of people who are passionate for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the coaches I look up to and the ones that I admire and the ones that I'm trying to emulate are the ones that I think are doing it in the right way, because very rarely are you going to idolize a person who is super passionate, but is going to do it in ways that are going to throw other coaches around or throw coaches underneath them. I think finding that balance of being uber competitive and understanding when it's necessary to be cutthroat, but also guiding it. Like I think all the coaches that I've run into that I ask questions to, for the most part, are more than willing to answer them and more than willing to let me really get into their heads a little bit. But there have been a few that haven't necessarily been as open. And those are the ones that I don't look up to. They're not the ones that I'm going to reach out to again, just because you remember the ones that really like stood out to you in a positive way and the ones that stood out to you in a negative way.
So speaking of that, and we know with last week being the Thanksgiving holidays, what coaches are you thankful for that you've gotten some type of experience with in your career?
Absolutely. I would say like a lot of the ones that we've had on this show, all the ones up at Wisconsin have been like when I was a young assistant coach that really there was no reason to let me in the program, both on the men's and the women's side, but John Trask on the men's side and Paul Wilkins on the women's side. They let me in, and really, I still remember a story. I was going to a gas station just to pick up, I think it was just like a pop, because I'm addicted to pop and gum. And I walked in there, and Trask, who I didn't even think knew my name, like came in there, and he was just like, "Hey, are you going to come to Blue Moon with us?" And which is a bar that we always go to right downtown. I was like, "Yeah, for sure." He's like, "All right, just follow me over." And I went over there, and it ended up just being me and his two assistant coaches that. We just ended up talking like he didn't have to invite me to that meeting. And like, I just sat there with him and T Meyer and just talked for like 2 hours and just over beers and stuff. And like, I remember that type of stuff. Northern Illinois coaches. John over there has been nothing but phenomenal to me. Sam Schrader, I always joke about, like, he was literally the first person that reached out to me with an email after I got the Monmouth job, and I'll still never forget that type of deal either, just because he didn't have to. And it really meant a lot at the time when I was new to the conference, new to being a head coach, new to the area. And so to have a few people in your corner right away. What about you?
Man, I actually was thinking about this because I was like, all right, I'm going to ask a really awesome question this week. I'm going to ask, you know, like, who are we thankful for in our career? For me, every coach that I've played for, you know, from rec soccer all the way to college, I've taken something from every coach that I've ever been a part of, and I'm very thankful for those people. Yeah. Scott Wilson that we had on here is a person I'm very, 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 very thankful for. Because I think that he saw the level of coach that I was and thought that I was a good coach, and he really helped me kick that thing up a whole nother notch. And just I think he created this monster that I am now. And I think that you know, he created this monster, and then Mike Jacobs, who is now the technical director at Nashville SC, shout out to Mike Jacobs. Just took that job, but I believe they're going to get the next MLS bid. You know, Coach Jacobs showed me a lot more of the behind-the-scenes type stuff, especially when it comes to college coaching. And there's just so many guys out there that I wish I could name every single person. But we would have another, like, 3 hours of the show that we have to do.
No, and actually, to add to that too, I completely, when you were talking about this, I was thinking of only the recent ones, but obviously the head coach I had in college, who taught me that I could actually be, like, we talked about this in the back, that I could actually be a college coach as a profession, and it also guided me through an awesome 4 years as a player. But like that, those are the things too, because who gave you that idea that coaching was a thing you could do?
Man, my high school coach told me that when I was in high school, and I told him there's no way, because I hate kids. And I want to say that I was saying that just because at the time I was helping a one of my mom's friend coach her daughter's U16. And I think not that I had a bad experience. I had a great experience working with the kids. You know, it was good for our community, good for our high school team, for us to get involved with stuff like that. My college coach told me that, and I think I just had the answer pre-planned, like, no, I don't like kids. I don't want to do it. And then he just told me one day, like, hey, I'm giving you a U14 girls team. You've got practice on Tuesday, and this was a Monday. And if anybody knows my college coach, that makes totally a lot of sense. But, you know, they just kind of threw me into it. And I think, as I stated, I think on our preview show or one of our first episodes, was my first practice was just – two of the worst hours of my life, and I realized that I wasn't good at it, and I wanted to get better, and that's what got me to where I'm at now. So there's a part of me that blames my college coach for it all, because I would have never reached out to anybody. I never would have, like, looked up, like, how to become a soccer coach if it wasn't for him just sending me an email or a phone call, whatever it was, just saying, like, hey, I'm giving you a team, you have training in 2 days. So they're definitely the ones that I blame for all that. What about you?
It was definitely my college coach, Dan Rother, Dolores. I just remember thinking, I would watch him and doing the things he did, and I just remember thinking, like, this is the coolest job ever. Like, he just coaches us. And then, like, when you're a college kid, I'm sure you're the same way. You don't realize all the stuff that they have to do behind the scenes that actually takes up time. But, like, in my vision, it's like the teachers, like, they just assume they sleep at the school. I just remember thinking, like, oh, man, he just shows up to soccer practice and coaches us. And, like, man, this job's easy, because you don't remember that, like, all the time he spent recruiting you, he had to spend recruiting, like, 100 other kids. And so – and all the travel and everything and the planning that you have to do. But I remember thinking, like, this is awesome. And so as soon as I said to him, I was like, hey, I'm thinking about being – I want to be a coach. He was the first one. He got me in contact with everyone. I was coaching club the next week. I was a head coach of a local high school team a few months later. I mean, in my first job, he was a huge recommendation for me. And so, I mean, for him, that was the one for me where it's just like he was the one that showed me it was a possibility to do this. And so, again, super thankful for that, because I would not – be coaching soccer if he wasn't one that really got behind me with it. I actually saw him this past weekend too.
And we would be remiss if we did not say that we were thankful for all of the listeners that we have who have checked us out, have checked this show out every week for the last 24 weeks, except for last week because we didn't have a show. But, you know, it's because of you guys why the show's still going strong, why the numbers are jumping up. You know, if you really would, you know, we'd appreciate that you would just go on iTunes, leave us a rating. 5-star would be awesome. And a review. Let us know what you think of the show. You can also tweet the links out, put the links on Facebook, send them in emails, whatever. Just send a link out. Tell a friend about the show and let them know that they're missing a really good show. Just so many coaches have come up to us and saying, like, this is the perfect thing to listen to in the car on the way to a game or on the way to a recruiting trip, whatever it may be, or whenever they get some downtime. So we want to thank you, the listeners. We appreciate you guys for y'all letting these two little dudes who don't know diddly squat talk to you every single week, but also bring in some amazing coaches who just provide all of us with great knowledge. Nick, how can people get a hold of you on the Twitter?
Best place to reach me is at Coach N Rizzo. What about you, brother?
I am at Coach Soderling on the Twitter, and you can chat with us every single week on Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Twitter. Just join the hashtag Soccer Chat at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also follow on Twitter at Chat Soccer with no E. So that's S-O-C-C-R. Every single Wednesday night, Nick's always on there. I'm always on there for the most part, unless there's some type of emergency where I can't be there or he can't be there. But we're always on there every night. Lots of great conversations with lots of great coaches from all across the country, whether they're club, youth, high school, college, pro, whatever. You know, we're talking to a lot of great coaches who have a lot of great ideas and different ideas on things. Thank you to everybody at Social Media for the High School Athletes for all their support, for giving us the space. We are very, 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 very thankful for them giving us the space and this platform to put the message out for coaches. You can check them on every social media platform at HS Social Media or on their website, socialstudentathletes.com. I'm Sean. He's Nick. We're thankful. Well, he's not, but I'm fat, especially after the Thanksgiving food that I ate and going back home because I ate way too much good stuff. I got more boxes of Grippos and Grippos barbecue rings. I'm going to go pound those real quick because I'm fat. Nick, I will catch you next week.
See you later, brother.
What in the world makes you think that, like, I'm as big as Mountain on a Game of Thrones? Like, you've seen my pictures.
I mean, like, there's no perspective because I don't know the people that you're standing next to. And typically, you're always the taller of the groups. So I'm just assuming everyone else is, like, 6 foot and you're about 6'5". I just assume, especially, like, you have the beard. I always imagine that you were just a very large human being that, like, could beat everyone up with a pinky.
Well, I mean, that part's true, but I'm 6'5". I am not whatsoever.
In my head.
Whatsoever. I'll take it, though.